Hello,
Morning,
Susan.
good morning.
morning, morning, everyone.
Morning.
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock now. We need to start with our meeting. From the member side, I've got Mr. Chavan here, Mr. Ple, Mr. Ross, Ms. Mulekwa, Ms. Kayile, and Ms. Lekwase. So we do have a quorum to elect the acting chairperson, and then I'll be admitting other members as we go. The chairperson is not in the meeting. And then in terms of rule 159, in the absence of the chairperson, the committee must elect one of its members as an acting chairperson for the meeting. Therefore, we are going to elect an acting chairperson for today. The procedure will be that I'm going to ask for a nomination. A member will nominate a person, and then that person, if it is only one person, that person will be duly elected the acting chairperson. If there are two members, then we are going to vote by a show of hands. The person with the majority vote will be the acting chairperson. I'm going to ask now for the nomination from the floor.
Chair.
Hi, Ms. Mlekwa.
Chairperson, my hand is raised.
Oh, Mr. Klee, I'm sorry, Mr.
Thank you very much, Chair. I wish to nominate the Honorable Musa Chabane.
Mr. Chavan has been nominated. Any seconder?
Honorable Mulekwa seconding.
Honorable Mlekwa seconded. Any other nomination? There's no other nomination. Therefore, Mr. Chavan has been duly elected the acting chairperson. Mr. Chavan, can you take through over the meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Matonsi. I mean, audible.
Yes.
No, thank you, Mr. Matonsi. Good morning, members. Good morning, the chairperson of the IEC and other commissioners, the CEO of the IEC and the entire executive, the team of the Home Affairs. I request Mr. Matonsi to flag the agenda.
Okay, let me just bring it. I'm going to it, Chairperson. Are you able to see it?
Yes.
Okay.
No, thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Matonsi, and for recording the apology of the Chairperson Advocate Bongo, who has just been released from hospital. He was not well due to the COVID related matters, but he's recovering well. I think we wish him a more speedy recovery. And greeting to all members, honorable members, and I must appreciate members for responding to this invite during your constituency period. And this is a demonstration of your collective commitment to serve the people of South Africa. As you run the greetings to all the team present here, you're all welcome. The staff of the all the stakeholders present here, Home Affairs, the IEC, and also our media component. This meeting convened just after the unrest, as we have seen in the province of KZN and Gauteng. But to this extent, we must appreciate and thank the good work demonstrated by the security cluster to bring stability in the side of the country. We must also appreciate our people who stood firm against this form of unrest and the looting. although there were casualties of people who lost their lives, we extend condolences to their respective families. Home Affairs members has not been spared from this unrest. Some of our offices will be vandalized. And I think we have noted that some of our offices could not render services as a standard and contributed negatively to lack of service delivery. We're still in the pandemic, in the midst of pandemic, and I must appreciate government's continuous efforts to try and cap this pandemic and hope that all our people will continuously to volunteer to participate in the vaccination program. I'm sure Chairperson Mashinini already and your team have volunteered to participate in this program. It is quite important also to reaffirm our collective appreciation to the continuous work, good work of the IEC that has demonstrated over time and your careful consideration to navigate the process in pursuit to deliver a free and fair local government elections. We have observed that in your initial stage of launching the preparation of the elections, you came, some quarters came under attack to the IEC why they've launched or why they're launching these elections when there's a process of the Deputy Chief Justice Museneke. But we must put clearly that that launching was correct because you did present it to the committee over time in terms of the process you're going to engage in as you prepare for the election. I think members will record that over time the IEC came to the portfolio committee to present on some of the issues in preparation for the local government elections. There are some pieces of legislation that we have passed in parliament that give effect to the preparation of the election. So it was correct for the IEC at that point to have pronounced their readiness because, as I indicated earlier, that they carefully navigated this process of elections by appointing the former Deputy Chief Justice Museneke to look so that he ascertain whether the IEC can conduct a free and fair elections on the 27th of October. Suppose the inquiry of the IEC of the Deputy Chief Justice Museneke and the process engaged by the IEC, we reaffirm, and I think we really support that initiative because it demonstrates a careful consideration on the path of strengthening our democracy. Now, today, members, we have invited the IEC to give a detailed brief on the process moving forward since the outcome of the former Deputy Chief Justice Seneca inquiry that has been concluded. And I think the IEC have considered the report. And this will include the development around the process that the IEC is going to engage on from henceforth, whether they want to approach the Electoral Court or the Constitutional Court. And I think that they will outline in details in this meeting. And if there will be any possibility of introducing piece of legislation that Parliament has to look at, I think will be brief to that extent. And I think also the IEC will be briefing us on the process of the voter registration and the impact of the this online voter registration in terms of mobilizing our people to continuously launch. We must also appreciate all the political parties, civil society, and all stakeholders who contributed to the Deputy Chief Justice Museneke inquiry. With those remarks, we welcome all the members in this portfolio committee and the stakeholders that are going to interact with the report of the IEC. And I've indicated earlier that to thank members who took time out of their space of constitutional work to attend this important meeting of the brief of the IEC. Mr. Matonsi, can I invite you to run on apologies if we have, and I'll then go to the IEC on the apologies and introductions. I'm not sure that if the minister is in the meeting, but I think Mr. Matonsi can run on the apologies.
Chairperson, yes, the minister is in the meeting. I admitted him. Apologies that I have here is from Ms. Tito. And then Ms. van der Merwe will be joining us if we're still in the meeting around 11 o'clock. She indicated that she's traveling from Durban to Cape Town from 9 o'clock. But in her absence, she indicated that the chief whip of the IFP will attend the meeting, but I have not seen him. And also the IFP's advocate will also attend the meeting. The other apologies is that of Ms. Mudise. She's saying she's attending the security cluster meeting. And then the other one is Ms. Ilhwase. Although she's here in the meeting now, she indicated to me that she will want to be released by quarter to 10. That's all, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Matonsi. Thanks very much. Greeting, Minister. I will invite the Minister to introduce this team and invite the IEC. Minister?
Yes, good morning. Good morning.
Morning, Minister.
Of the session, Honorable Chabani, let me also greet the Chairperson of the IEC, Redland Machinini, and this and the commissioners who I see there. I see the deputy chairperson, Ms. Jeanette Love. Let me also greet the chief electoral officer, Mr. Sai Mamabolo, and let me also greet all members of the portfolio committee. I'm happy to see their faces after such a long time, and I'm sure this meeting will not have to be that long, because a lot of things have already been discussed in public during the press conference of the IEC. Chairperson, I know that my deputy minister will not be able to be around. I'm trying to see through the screen whether the DG is around, because then I'll tell him to introduce his team. But remember, for IEC matters, I usually attend at the political level without managers, because the IEC doesn't really report to our manager. So I'm not sure whether DG is in, because I'm not sure who is in with me here. Maybe you can just call them on my behalf to find out.
No, thank you, Minister. I think it's sufficient, your attendance. We'll acknowledge if they've attended the meeting. Chairperson Machinin.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, Mr. Chabane, the Honorable Minister of Home Affairs, Dr. Motsoaledi, and the officials from the Department of Home Affairs present, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee, fellow commissioners that have joined me, Chairperson, the Vice Chairperson, Ms. Janet Love, Dr. Masubu, and Commissioner Miepa, together with Judge Pillay. I'm also joined by the Chief Electoral Officer, Mr. Mamabolo, with members of the Electoral Commission executive and senior management that are with us today. Members of the media present, ladies and gentlemen, Chairperson and honorable members, indeed, we are very much appreciative as the Commission to have this opportunity to update the members about the developments regarding the local government elections. On and about the 20th of May, as we all would recall, the Commission appointed the former Deputy Chief Justice Dikgang Mosineke to lead a process to review whether the current conditions are conducive or not to the holding of free and fair elections. And this followed that the engagement between the Commission and the political stakeholders, and where the Commission could not find a consensus or agreement among the political parties about this. But at the same time, the Commission also understood the complexities and intricacies to actually, as the chairperson pointed out, to charter the waters and to steer the country in as far as the issue of the local government elections. And we were fortunate then to secure the expertise of none other than Justice Musineke, who then undertook an urgent review of all the relevant factors which have a bearing on the holding of the free and fair elections under safe conditions. And the considerations he made were clearly outlined in his report and broadly canvassed with all the stakeholders, but they included such matters as the legal and constitutional matters, as well as our socio-political dimension, the health and life issues, as well as the administrative and practical considerations were all the matters that he took into consideration. And in addition to assessing the various factors, Justice Musineke was also required or requested to make recommendations of any additional initiatives and measures to further fortify the credibility and the safety of the elections. And it is important that we indicate that the request to Justice Musineke was made in line with Section 14(4) of the Electoral Commissions Act 51 of 1996. If you allow me to quote, Stephen, it states that the Commission may, if it deemed it necessary, publish a report on the likelihood or otherwise that it will be able to ensure that any pending elections will be free and fair, close quote. Now, this is a very critical point, is that the ability for the Commission to come up and publish a report on the likelihood or otherwise could only be done around the time that it actually commissioned it, because of the unpredictability of the behavior of the pandemic. And even experts are unable to fully and properly foretell about it. And we were fortunate that Justice Musineke finalized the report in almost about 61 days, a day before the scheduled time, and handed over the report to the Commission. And having received the report, the Commission then immediately released the report for the public in the interest of transparency, but then took the time out to apply itself to the report and came to a conclusion. And then on the 22nd of July, then the Commission deliberated with the National PLC on the recommendations of the report. And this was also followed by a media briefing in which the Commission announced its acceptance of the report and its recommendations on the same day. And the recommendations of the inquiry obviously have far-reaching consequences for the local government. And in conclusion, honorable members, the Commission is dealing with unprecedented extraordinary situation that carries uncharted constitutional implications. And as we speak, we are still in the process of consultations with our council, and at the same time we are also in consultation as required in law with the Minister of COGTA. So I just think it's important that the members understand that there may be matters or things that at this stage we may not be have finalized them, and it would not be because we do not want to respond or to answer and clarify them, but it would be because the situation is very fluid, and we need also to be very cautious that we still remain responsible in that we cannot take the law into our own hands. So even discussing certain issues, we have to take into consideration the legal implications of that. So I thought, you know, let me, in my conclusion, underline that point, and then request the CEO and his team that they then can take the honourable members through the report or unpack the report for the members, and then we can have a discussion. Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, I'd like to thank you, and with your permission, may I then invite our CEO, Mr. Mamabolo.
Thank you, Chairperson Mashinin. CEO, Mr. Mamabolo.
Good morning, Chairperson. Greetings to the Minister, greetings to Commissioners and members of the Committee. Without wasting time, Dr. Shiburi Masego will take us through the presentation on behalf of the Commission. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Mr. Shiburi?
Good morning, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Minister, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, Commissioners, the CEO, colleagues. Good morning.
Good morning.
The presentation traverses a number of things. I will first sketch a background, then highlight the key procedural things that the inquiry considered, then go to the heart of the presentation, which is the findings of the inquiry and the conclusions. By way of background, since the onset of the pandemic, the National Party Liaison Committee has been seized with a difficult task of honoring the constitutional dictates of regular, free, and fair elections in a changed context. This culminated in the Commission adopting a protocol to minimize the risk of transmissions during election activities. This protocol was adopted already in mid-2020. The protocols have been implemented in no fewer than 150 by-elections between November 2020 and May 2021. Since about January this year, discussions in the PLC among the represented parties, and those parties are represented in the National Assembly, has evolved around the feasibility of holding elections in 2021 amid the COVID reality. The views of political parties have crystallized into two diametrically opposed views. The one saying that elections should proceed as required by the regularity provision in the Constitution within the extant timelines. The other view saying that circumstances are not such that free and fair elections can be held, and therefore they should be postponed to an indefinite date in the future. In the context, the Commission then on the 20th of May appointed Justice Moseneke to preside over a dispassionate and independent, robust process to consider representations by the various stakeholders, including political parties, as well as hearing evidence from scientific community and the health experts on the possible trajectory of the pandemic, in order to answer the following question. The terms of reference of the inquiry were as follows: that the justice must inquire into, make findings, report on, and make recommendation whether the Commission will be able to ensure that the forthcoming local government elections will be free and fair given the COVID-19 pandemic and the measures promulgated by government to curb the continued spread of the virus. The second output of the inquiry was that it ought to indicate additional measures that the Commission may have to implement to realize free and fair elections. The chairperson has already indicated that the assignment was authorized properly in terms of the law, so I will not deal with that. All parties that had made submissions to the process were afforded an opportunity to indicate if they wished to make oral submissions. And in all instances, all requests for oral submissions were accommodated by the inquiry. So from the week of the 28th, the inquiry invited written submissions from key stakeholders on specified issues. And interested persons or stakeholders that made submissions can be categorized into the following groupings. It was independent medical experts, including the Department of Health, international and regional electoral monitoring bodies, domestic monitoring bodies, political parties registered with the Commission, including those that are registered but not represented either in Parliament, in the legislature, or in municipal councils. And there was also a platform for the inquiry to receive submissions from interested members of the public, because political rights accrue to every person, not just to political parties and organized formations. During the week of the 28th of June, the inquiry had oral submissions from a range of interested parties. And it is important to indicate that all submissions, written and oral, have been carefully curated on the web page of the inquiry and are thus available. Additionally, the inquiry studied and compared electoral practices in the country by way of by-elections, as well as the rest of the continent and other jurisdictions internationally, to see what good practices, if any, could be gleaned from our own by-elections, from our sister countries on the continent, as well as other international jurisdictions. I now go into the heart of the inquiry's findings. In order to come to a conclusion, the inquiry had, out of necessity, had to answer a number of questions. The first question that needed to be answered was whether local government elections may ever be postponed. This is so because we know that the Constitution sets a limit to a term of a municipal council, and that limit is 5 years. We also know that the Constitution is also instructive to say an election must be held within 90 days of expiry of the term. The term of the current municipal council expires on the 3rd of August 2021, and therefore 90 days reckoned from that date will take us to the 1st of November. So an election must be held sometime between the 4th of August, but no later than the 1st of November. We know that there's a limit now to the term of a municipal council. We also know that there are no mechanisms provided for either in law or in the Constitution to extend the term of municipal councils beyond the 90 days after the expiry of the term. And there are also no law, legal provisions or constitutional provisions that enable an election to be postponed beyond the 90-day period after the expiry of the term. Certainly, the Electoral Commission does not have those powers, and also the Minister responsible for cooperative governance, while she has the obligation to set a date for an election, she has no option not to set a date within the constitutionally prescribed period. The last point on this slide, I think, is very instructive, because in the course of discussions in the PLC, as well as during oral submissions, stakeholders tended to elevate some constitutional provisions over others in order to advance their cause. And a narrative began to emerge that the right to free and fair elections can be pitted against the obligation, the constitutional obligation in the founding values to regular elections. What the inquiry has clarified is that the constitutional standard is that the elections must be regular and free and fair. So it is not a binary option of either or. So an election that is regular, i.e. an election that is held before the 1st of November this year, but it is not free and fair, doesn't meet the constitutional standard. Similarly, an election that is free and fair, but it is not held within the constitutionally defined period, may not meet constitutional muster. So in its conclusion, the inquiry concludes that the constitutional standard is that regularity, i.e. holding elections within the constitutionally determined time frame, must at all material times coexist and be co-present with the right to free and fair elections. So those rights should not be pitted against each other, but rather they are complementary. They must coexist. They must be co-present for an election to meet the constitutional standard. In the final analysis, the inquiry reaffirmed what we've always known, that there are two possibilities to achieve a deferment or a postponement of an election beyond the 90 day after the expiry of term. The first one is to seek a constitutional amendment, and that constitutional amendment must amend the following provisions. Section 1D. We all know that Section 1D deals with regular, free and fair election, and it is in the founding values of the Constitution. The second provision is Section 159(2) of the Constitution. To the extent that the constitutional amendment implicates one of the founding provisions, i.e. Section 1D, it is the view of the inquiry that this is not possible by a two-thirds majority, but it requires a super majority of 75% support of members and support by at least six provinces. That is so because this goes to the heart and it amends a founding provision or founding values of the commission. So notionally, the first, one of the two options available is a constitutional amendment. However, the report also concludes that it is not desirable for the constitution to be amended to deal with temporary difficulties. The second option available to occasion a deferment or postponement of an election is that a court of competent jurisdictions must be approached. And if that court accepts that it has jurisdiction, then it a case must be made out that exceptional circumstances warrant that the extension of a term of a municipal council be granted. And in making that case out, whoever makes the case must be able to demonstrate that they have a date in mind at which a future election can be held. But that date must not be too far from the date beyond the 90-day period of an election timetable. And again here, it is clear that it is the Electoral Commission's responsibility to approach the court to seek this relief. This is so because the Constitution places an obligation to ensure free and fair election on the Electoral Commission alone, and this responsibility is not shared with any state entity, department, or any stakeholder. So it will be the responsibility of the Electoral Commission to make out a case to cause an application to be launched to indicate to the court that circumstances are such that it is not possible to guarantee free and fair elections demanded by the Constitution. The second question that the inquiry needed to answer was, would local government elections held in October 2021 be free and fair? The inquiry concludes that it is not reasonably possible or likely that the local government elections scheduled for the month of October 2021 will be free and fair. And this is so based on the following. So the inquiry based its conclusion on the following considerations. First, is that the country is under alert level 4, which imposes restrictions on movement, gatherings, and activities of political parties and other hopeful independent candidates. Because the report was released, as we all remember, when the country was still under level 4. So the circumstances may have changed now. The second point is that the regulations on alert level 4 are only due for review on 25 July, which is 6 days from the registration weekend, which was scheduled for the Saturday, the 31st of July, and Sunday, the 1st of June, of August. And the conclusion, the inquiry concludes that if elections were to proceed as scheduled, most of the activities will not be reasonably possible, starting with the face-to-face registration of voters, the finalization of the nomination process by registered political parties as well as independent candidates. Additionally, the commission, the inquiry concluded that under this regulation, the Commission may be constrained from conducting its activities as demonstrated by the postponement of by-elections in alert levels higher than alert level 1. In summarizing those conclusions, in other words, restrictions on the ability of political parties and independent candidates to campaign limits their right to contest elections. It limits their rights to campaign, and it is a limitation on freedom of expression. And therefore, it diminishes the freeness and fairness of an election. Similarly, because political parties are unable to campaign and popularize their manifesto position, it diminishes the rights of the electorate to vote, or at least to vote on an informed basis. The second key reason that the inquiry concluded as it did was having had evidence from scientists and health experts. In this regard, the inquiry heard from at least 9 scientists and health experts. While the health expert had other views, there are certain views on which their opinions coalesced, where they have agreement, and those are the following: that the country is in the middle of a third wave. That was the case during the oral submission heard by the inquiry. The experts are also agreed that the Delta variant is the dominant strain of the virus in the country. Experts are also agreed that the Delta variant is more transmissible than the previous 2 variants. And for this reason, it can spread faster resulting in large number of persons requiring medical care and hospitalization. The experts are agreed that the capacity of the health system is inadequate to deal with the increase in the number of hospitalizations, and that notionally only Gauteng, the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal may be able to meet the substantial health system response required from instances of increased hospitalization. In other words, only 3 out of the 9 provinces could be able to meet the substantial health system response. The other point that scientists are agreed on in health expect is that there is significant undercounting of COVID-19 deaths, as demonstrated by the excess mortality report issued by the Medical Research Council. At the point of the oral submissions, the rate of excess mortality released by MRC stood at 180,000. Juxtapose this to the then official mortality rate of 58,000. There is about a threefold under-reporting of mortality. The experts are also agreed that 85% of the 180,000 excess mortality cases can be attributable to the COVID-19. So which means that there is under-reporting of the deaths related to the coronavirus in the Republic. The experts agreed that the month of October 2021 will be a period of low transmission. And this is true based on the following assumptions: that there will be no new variant that arises in the intervening period. Again, experts are agreed that there has never been a period of no infection, but we know that there are waves. So even in the period outside of the waves, it doesn't mean that there are no transmission. It just means there's transmission, but the rate of transmission is low. Health experts agree that vaccines are better at protecting against severe disease. The report then concludes that it is thus worthwhile to try to get to some level of community immunity, which will substantially reduce the risk of hospitalization and death. And they conclude that it will not be possible for the country to achieve community immunity by October 2021. And that the more people that are vaccinated at the time of holding elections, the more lives will be saved. So there will be more persons vaccinated in February 2022 than in October 2021. And therefore, there will be less hospitalization and mortality in February 2022 compared to October 2021. I think it is worth repeating the last point on this slide. The thesis of the inquiry is that if it is accepted that vaccines prevent against serious illnesses in February 2022, because there will be more people vaccinated, what they're saying, they're not saying there won't be spikes in cases of transmissions or even a wave in February 2022. But what they are saying is that even if a wave were to materialize or there were to be an increase in the number of infections, those will not overwhelm the health system because it will not result in a rise in the rate of hospitalization. Similarly, because a significant number of persons are vaccinated, it will also not result in a high or in a spike in the mortality rate. So while there may be an increase in the number of infections, that will not have the corresponding result of spikes in hospitalizations and spikes in mortality that has characterized the 3 waves hitherto. having concluded as follows, the inquiry also set out why a deferral into February 2022 is preferable. In other words, why a deferral to February 2022 and not beyond February of that year? And there are three key considerations. The first was to prevent a slippery slope that might undermine the democratic project, or put differently, a slippery slope that might undermine the political rights guaranteed in Section 19 of the Constitution. And therefore, the conclusion of the inquiry is that elections may only be deferred once, and if they are deferred, they must also be deferred to the earliest date possible, determined as the safest. And they've made that determination that February 2022 will be safer than October 2021. The second justification for an election in February 2022 is that, in terms of the inquiry, an election represents a reset moment, and that given the evidence and oral submission by the stakeholders, municipal governance is speedily in need of a reset. And for that reason, it is not desirable that the stay of incumbents in office is extended beyond their constitutionally mandated time. Third is that we must allow new councils to be elected in time so that they can approve the annual budgets before the commencement of the new financial year. In other words, this gives manifestation to the reset moment that is represented by an election. So, having traversed all those areas of stakeholder submissions, oral submissions, submission from health experts and scientists, and having considered international good practice, and having looked at the scheme of the law and the constitution, the inquiry came to the following conclusions. One, that it is not reasonably possible or likely that the local government elections scheduled for the month of October 2021 will be held in a free and fair manner. Secondly, that elections are likely to be free and fair if they were to be held no later than the end of February 2022. Thirdly, that should the Commission accept the outcome of the inquiry, it must approach a court of competent jurisdiction to seek a just and equitable order to defer the local government elections to no later than the month of February 2022. In keeping with the terms of reference, the inquiry also made a number of recommendations, 22 in total, which implicate the following areas of the electoral cycle as tabulated in this slide. The Commission released the report on the same date that it was availed to it by the inquiry. This was key in keeping with the transparency that underpinned the entire process, to say to the South African public, while the Commission will retreat to consider the report, it wants the report to be in the public domain so that there cannot be accusations that the Commission has changed things that were not favorable to it. So the report was released on the same day that it was issued to the Commission. The Commission has now had an opportunity to consider the report, and it has resolved to accept the report, including its findings, including the conclusions that were in the report. Having accepted the report, there are a number of implications that arise from the report. The first one is that the registration weekend that was scheduled for the week for this weekend has been postponed. And I think it is worth mentioning here that the reason for the postponement of the registration weekend is not because the commission is going to court. The reason for postponing the registration weekend is that we accept that the country is in a third wave. While Gauteng has indication of that it has peaked and it is on its way down, the reality is that the third wave peaked at higher cases, and therefore it will take time for the peak to reduce significantly. And because provinces do not reach a peak at the same moment, while one province, which was the epicenter of the third wave, might have peaked, there are indications, or there were indications at the time of the report, that three other provinces were entering a peak. And that peak, scientists are agreed,
Mr. Shiburi, for that conduct, discipline conduct display. Can all of us mute so that we give opportunity to presenter to adequately interact with their presentation? Thanks, Mr. Shiburi. You can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. So the deferral or the postponement of the registration weekend is not because the Electoral Commission is going to court to seek a postponement. It is premised on the fact of scientific evidence that the period coincides with the peak in the majority of provinces of the third wave. So that is the only consideration that has led to the deferral of the registration weekend. The Commission will, in the next week, approach the Constitutional Court for a judicial authority authorizing the deferral of an election to a period outside of the extant constitutional scheme. Thirdly, the Commission has considered the recommendations, the 22 recommendations that have been issued, and it will adjust implementation of its electoral projects in such a way that it gives effect to those recommendations, guided by whether those recommendations require any amendment to the law. So we will be able to accommodate those adjustments that do not require adjustment to the law, and also those recommendations that have financial implications. We can only honor those to the extent that we have financial resources available to accommodate those recommendations. In conclusion, Chair, the inquiry in its work has sought to grant equal weight to all the views of stakeholders, irrespective of the size of the voice or irrespective of how disagreeable that voice was. The Commission or the inquiry has sought to steer away from partisan views, and it has sought to base its conclusion based on the prevailing science as was available to it at that period in time. The conclusion that elections, if they were to be held in October 2021, will not be free and fair, must be seen in the light that while in October we will be in a period of low transmissions, an election does not only involve the voting day. There are other activities that happen before voting day that are almost precedent to whether those elections can be declared free and fair. So the reason we cannot organize an election in October is that we know now that we've not had a registration weekend owing to the rates of infection. We know now that Regulation 4 has placed limitation on movement of persons and the ability of political parties to organize meetings, to schedule meetings so that they could derive lists of candidates. We know now that the Electoral Commission under Alert Level 4 has been able to work, but it was constrained in its activities. So while October 2021 represents a period of low transmission, it doesn't follow that because we held an election, that election can meet the standard of freeness and fairness when we have not had a general registration weekend to refresh the voters' roll, to enable people who intend to contest to register, and if they are registered, to change their registration, update their registration details so that they are registered in the segments in which they wish to contest. Final word, a recommendation that an election in February 2022 will be much safer is premised on the rate that in February, more persons would have been vaccinated. And if it is accepted that vaccines limit grave illness, and therefore limit hospitalization and limit the death rate, February 2022, even if the numbers were to peak, to increase again, the numbers of infections were to increase again, would not result in more hospitalization or more deaths, and therefore it represents the safest period within which to hold an election. That concludes the input, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
No, thanks very much for that detailed brief on both the work that the deputy, former Deputy Chief Justice reports outlines and the overview approach in terms of how you are responding as the IEC to that report. Members, this report presented for our interaction. I'm going to invite members. Mr. Matons, you'll assist if because you have noted that the member of the IFP will be here and will attend this meeting. I assume they are attending on behalf of the co-chair. So you'll just indicate. We'll start with the Honourable Lekhwase, and then invite Honourable Mqini, Honourable Ross, Honourable Kanyile, Honourable Molekwa, and Honourable Pile. So far, these are our members who are in attendance of this meeting. Honourable Lekhwase.
Chairperson, you remember she said she might leave around 9:45, so I'm not sure if she's in the meeting.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Matunzi. Honorable Mqini, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Acting Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. Greetings to the members and everyone. No, Chair, as the EFF, we already welcomed the Mosineke report, and it has rubber stamped the position that the EFF has always had in terms of that we must all at material time use science and also looking at the material condition of what is happening, so that we're able to decide, actually proper. We have warned the IEC many, many times in terms of what is going to happen, because we saw the science, also the predictions of the infections that were rising. And also we did tell them that at the center of elections that must happen, they must be free and fair. And obviously there's a lot of definition out there in the literature in terms of what does it mean, free and fair. And we said, look, at this point in time, we've been under lockdown. And we not have been able to meet our constituencies and do a face-to-face interaction. And also, you know that choosing a candidate of political parties like the one of the EFF, the Bugal Party of the Working Class and the Poor, the constituency with no data and all of that, we have to meet on a face-to-face so that we can choose candidates amongst themselves. We even made a representation to say we've got wards where you find the membership is over 1,000. And amongst those people, you must choose one person which is going to be a councillor. So because of the lockdown and the restrictions, if you want to have a meeting in terms of selecting a candidate, how are you going to do that? Because you cannot just take anyone. You need to apply a democratic process so that it does not lead to instability. We advise that very patiently, amicably. We try to actually, to lobby that. But we welcomed the consultation process that was adopted by the colleagues in the NPLC. Said, okay, let us consult with the IEC, and also let us extend this consultation to the party leaders. And then we're happy that the IC agreed with that. They prepared presentations. We all took part on that. But acting chair, what surprised us is that while we were busy on a consultation process so that we can have all convergent views on this thing of holding the election, the president of the country became excited like a molecule and announce the date of the elections. On the date, on the time that we're busy with the consultation, and it was done that it was on a, not in a neutral venue, but in an ANC activity. We found that very unacceptable. And also there was a negotiations in actually bad faith that made us to be very uncomfortable in terms of what is going on here. Are there any politics which are playing? Why are we doing what we're actually doing? Is this going to necessitate us what we must defy now, these lockdown activities, of which we always, as economic liberal fighters, advocated that we are not suffering from the ambition to lead at all costs, but we have to save lives. And we said, why are our colleagues doing what they're doing? Because we've been talking in terms of to find each other. And then, okay, fine. We welcome the resolution of the NPLC to really, and also the commissioners to really come up with this report. To seek the assistance of the MOSNEC, of the Deputy Chief Justice, to look into this issue. I want to bring this to your attention to really highlight in terms of the difficulty we went through in terms of getting to where we are now. I'm going to come to my questions and also the inputs. So, and also, Chair, the issue now is that we also saw now that there is a launch of elections, of which now at the point in time you had the Mosineke inquiry happening. agree that they came and presented, you know, the whole, you know, the timetable. But of course, Chair, you cannot be blind and see what is not happening because you're saying that this is what is, you know, this is what we've agreed on. We're going to implement it at all costs, because that was saying that irrespective of the Mosineke report, the elections are going to happen. We're going to launch them. We found that the launching of those elections were the wasteful and fruitless expenditures. It's again, it's actually executing this. We are navigating all of us into this path, but some of the individuals are really not thingies, you know. They are not navigating with us in a good faith. They don't want to be open with us. So now, Chair, it's fine. We welcome the report, and we're saying to the IC, they must approach the court of law to postpone this upcoming election, which were declared to happen on the 27th of October because of the infections that are rising. Then also we will like to advise the IEC to really look at science and look at what is happening. And as your president said, smell the coffee, that we are in a pandemic and we're on a third wave. And you all agree with me that we have serious problems in terms of the vaccine rollout. And the question is to that I want to put now to the IEC, or maybe the advice that I want to actually give them is that after this report, they need to look very, very close in terms of the implementation of the vaccine rollout. Because remember at the end, Chairperson, vaccine, after you actually been vaccinated, the report says that they need to vaccinate, I think, plus minus 67% of the population. I think that takes us to about 35 million, 40 million odd of the people. There needs to be a time to really now have a look in terms of if this vaccination is indeed working. How do you see that? After vaccinating people, there must be a period where the country is going to be open, activity, the economy is open, the regulations are down. Now you need to look at the mortality rate. If the mortality rate is zero, nothing, as with the increase of the infection, then you know that the people are vaccinated. The vaccination is actually going to working. Now the question would be saying that at this rate of vaccination, are we going to be able to vaccinate all the people, let's say October, or even earlier, so that we can check now when you open the country, activities are going, we're doing our campaigns, infections goes up, there's no death, or you can say there's no mortality rate. So we IEC needs to be close to the IEC, very, very okay. Close. And also they need to ensure that they use the expertise of the epidemiologists. So that they are able to tell them in terms of what is happening. And maybe I will advise them that they must have them actually be part of their meetings, or maybe come and have a space in their offices so that they can tell them in terms of what's the vaccination rate, what is happening now, so that they can be able to agree to do that. And okay. Also, the IEC must release a draft timetable of the projection in terms of what is actually happening. Number four, just only points, then I'm done. The opening of the political space, because now these elections, they must not happen more than, at the end of February. Political space must be open. Because remember, the elections are not happening on the day of election. We need to prepare. So political space is at the center of the problem. And this thing is always not being amplified all the time. You need to give space or time for political parties to do mobilization and stop their people. So this report is out, and then the elections are going to be there. IEC must actually release a draft timetable so that we can see and then health department, they must do their job. And also the report chairperson, lastly, has highlighted the issue of the ICASA, said that the ICASA must also look in terms of their way that they actually do this, the equitability of giving airtime to political parties, because other political parties, opposition parties will be given a space like midnight, so that we're not able to, you know, we're not able to talk to our, you know, our, you know, the people. Meaning that
okay.
They must look into that as well and ensure that we have enough airtime so that we can mobilize our people. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mtweni, for your contributions. Honorable Woss?
I'm going to time each and every person as well.
Are you, hold on, Honorable Woss. Honorable Mtweni, are you disrupting your meeting?
No, Chair, I'm just saying that I was putting points, and then also I've seen at some points that, you know, you let people, the whole thoughts to flow, because they're very, you know, sensitive topics, and also want to give inputs and direction. Now, if I sometimes get disturbed, you know, as I'm giving my input, you know, it makes my line of thought, it disrupts my line of thought, you know. You know how we do it in our meeting.
Honorable Mtweni, I'm asking, are you disrupting your meeting?
No, I'm not. But I was just raising a concern, Chair. Like, hey, you've chased me. I was in a nice part just to give a direction on this critical issue that is happening. Yeah. In the country.
No, members. I think I'm working with the time here, and I'm not intending to marginalize anyone to contribute. And I think all of us, we've been running in this process like that. So, and I think all of us, we know collectively how we run. So there might not be signs of that indicates that we want to censor some contributions. Thank you, Honorable Mtweni, for the contributions. Honorable Woss?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for this opportunity and to the IEC for the presentation. I think we started at the terms of reference and really looked at whether the election on the 27th of October would be free or fair, would it be possible, and also what could be done to make it happen. And I think the big question mark at this point in time is really the rationale behind a decision to postpone. And we're going to go and make a big request of various stakeholders to override a fundamental constitutional right and imperative. And so I believe, you know, the inquiry talks about that it seeks to find an objective and dependable standard that is suited to measure whether elections are free and fair. And we haven't seen that. We've seen Egypt and Ghana stated as countries where successful elections were held, where protocols were observed. But this dependable standard that the report talks about, I haven't seen it. I haven't actually seen it there. And as a portfolio committee, we really need to ensure that we receive this clarity. So it cannot be that we postpone indefinitely because of COVID. There's always some element of danger, and we need to get more clarity on some of these issues. And I'll start with super spreader. So the report talks about super spreader. But another one of the inputs is that every day there's millions of people in South Africa that queue for transport, travel, shop, work, even on level 4. So on what basis are we saying that an election with protocols will be a super spreader? We need to clarify that. We can't make statements that an election will be a super spreader when there are specific protocols in place. So the question is, are measures put forward by the IEC that are in the report, does the IEC see them as insufficient? And what additional measures is the IEC planning to put in place based on the report to ensure that the election process will not be a so-called super spreader, and that we can just put that argument to bed, that standing in a queue 1.5 to 2 meters apart in a controlled environment is a super spreader. Now, the EISA, and they are an organization that monitors elections broadly, they recommended that an agreement be reached between the Commission, the IEC, and Parliament, setting out this rationale clearly. as well as the period for the transitionary mechanism and the time limits and a potential date for the elections. So some of the key questions that are outstanding is we talk about campaigning. And my question is, what constitutes a sufficient opportunity to campaign? And how can this mass engagement that is being requested be facilitated? Again, if we are going to wait until we can have mass rallies, if we can fill a stadium, that could take years and years and years. So we're then not talking about February at all. And I think we need urgent clarity from the IEC, seems as it's not in the report. What constitutes a sufficient opportunity to campaign? Then there's the issue of immunity, again, where there's a lack of clarity in this report. Is there a specific percentage of vaccinations that will be needed? Because in the one section of the report, it talks about a number of vaccinations required to achieve general immunity. And then it talks about February as a date when we would probably have a reasonable amount of immunity. So I just want to get clarification from the IEC on their view based on the report. Is February sort of a cutoff date where we say that we need to give it that amount of time for as many vaccinations as possible to take place? Or is there some sort of a percentage that is going to be the standard? And what is the precedent for using a herd immunity or you know, general population immunity before deciding to go ahead with an election? Is there any precedent for this anywhere in the world? Then we talk about waves. So we talk about the third wave, and I think there's a general agreement that that date of the 27th of October would have been the safest. But there seems to be a question mark about at what stage in the wave would an election be safe, or would an election activity be safe? And at what stage do we make this forecast? So these questions are still not answers, and we need answers to that. Then we say that we sought to be guided by science. But really, these guidelines need to be provided to this committee. And so I'd request the answers to these questions to be furnished to the committee. Then in terms of readiness, my first question in that regard is in terms of the status and the time frame of the court application. Where are we specifically at that? Has anybody been briefed? Where are we specifically? What is the status and timeline of that court application? Then as Honorable Mtini has requested, I think we need to have election timetables as well. What is the general plan to have an election either in October if any measures to stop it are not successful, or in February? What are the different scenarios that the IEC is looking at? And what's important here is that you have a general scenario where you have a wave that goes up and you have a wave that goes down, and then there's a time period of less risk and then it goes up. So how is the IEC then considering those risks when it looks at a February timetable or an election timetable? Again, to say that we need a time period where campaigning is possible, and we decide that there's a reasonable measure to say we've now had a fair chance to campaign, we've had a fair chance for persons to register, and then when the election happens and all the processes in between. So we definitely need those timetables.
Okay.
Next question is about the registration weekend. What is the current broad time frame in terms of this? Mr. Shiburi mentioned postponing the registration weekend during the third wave. But by now, we should have some sort of a scientific indication of when this third wave will wash away. And so there should by now already be some sort of an indication of when we will aim to have this registration weekend. Have all the staff been appointed for the registration weekend? Are they all appointed, contracted in place? Are the VMD devices rolled out? And have all the staff been trained on these VMD devices? So are we truly ready for this registration weekend? And then in terms of the online registration platform, it's had its issues. What is the progress on this online registration platform? And in terms of correcting those issues? Then coming to an end, you know, there's mention of the personal protective equipment, that funding will need to be obtained from Treasury. If we can just get an indication of what the status is of this, what is the status of the approval by Treasury of the PPE fund that runs into almost 200 million, is my understanding. And then finally, Chair, I believe that Parliament is, you know, as the Portfolio Committee, we should take legal advice before considering whether to accept or support the decision of the IEC to accept the Mosinetti report, to apply for a postponement in the face of a constitutional obligation to have the elections before 27th of the 10th. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Ross, for your contributions. Honourable Kanyile.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, greetings to the colleagues and everyone that is in this meeting. We know to the presentation or the reports from the IEC. Firstly, Chairperson, I'd like to indicate that as a Democratic Alliance, we have always been ready for these upcoming elections. And I'd also like to bring to the attention of this meeting that when we heard that the inquiry was going to take place, already around this time, we had our national virtual meeting. So we were ready for the elections and we are still ready for the elections. And I also like the everyone or the meeting to note that when we had the initial outbreak of the COVID last year, that was in 2020, obviously, we were not having any elections, even the by-elections. Then when the wave started to go down, the IEC had successful by-elections. So what we'd like to know from the IEC is that what measures do they have in place to ensure that we are going to have safer elections in February 2020? That is, if we are going to have elections. And also, what we'd like to know is that should there be a need to have another postponement, does it mean we are going to have another inquiry taking place, or how exactly they're going to implement that? The second question that I have is that we have seen that other countries, they have had, like in the African countries, they've had their elections in 2021 and they didn't postpone them. So what are the main circumstances that in South Africa we are justifying the postponement of these elections? And we have also noted that there was a glitch with the online registration that was announced on the 14th of July. We want to know if that technical glitch were attended to, and if they were attended to, we want to know what was the IEC method that they were using to be able to verify the voters. And we would also like them to tell us that how does the numbers look like compared to when they were doing the physical voter registration weekend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Kanyile, for your contributions. Honourable Mulekwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also start by appreciating the presentation as presented by the Commission, and also welcome the report. Chairperson, I think the report covers most critical issues, and I think it was a wise decision by the IEC to appoint the Mosinetti to do an investigation on whether the election will be free and fair. We really appreciate the effort took by the Commission. Chairperson, currently the IEC has launched the online voter registration, and we really appreciate the proactive approach made by the Commission that irrespective of the current challenging pandemic situation, that the election work should continue. However, Chairperson, I just want to check with the Commission that though we may see the online registration process as simple as ABC, but there will be those who will not be able to understand the process. So I just want to check with the IEC that is there any plan for online voter registration education, especially for first-time voters. Secondly, Chairperson, I just want to check with the Commission that if the option one on the amendment of the Constitution will be applicable for the election to be held next year in February 2022. I just want to check with the Commission that is there any time frame set for consultation processes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mulekwa, for your contributions. Honourable Pile.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me greet all members present. Chair, firstly, I think it's very important to note that the background and prelude to any of these studies or investigations or assessments is based on a free and fair election. And ultimately, that is what we as South Africans, as Parliament, as government want to ensure, that our elections are free and fair. Chair, it's also common cause that elections are a large-scale community-based event that thrive on participation, as well as transparency to ensure the credibility. The right to vote is one that is dear and that it speaks directly to the founding values of our constitution. And since the democratic dispensation, South Africa has successfully held free and fair elections. The COVID-19 pandemic places a risk to the integrity of elections, and one of such risks being a low voter turnout. In its statement, the IEC resolves to urgently brief senior counsel to launch an application in a court of competent jurisdiction to seek judicial authorization to conduct the election outside of the constitutionally prescribed time. I just want to find out how far is this process, because this, I think, ultimately will determine the recommendations that has been made by the report. But I also want to congratulate and applaud both the IEC and the Chief Justice in the report that was presented. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Honorable Trini, Honorable Ruos, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Molekwa, and Honorable Pile for your contribution to this brief report. We'll allow, we're going to invite the IEC and also will allow follow-ups from members if there are issues that are not clarified properly. What I will advise that will, I think, we'll run to the invite Mr. Shiburi, the CEO, and the commissioners led by the chair, and the minister if he has to comment on two or three issues that are arising from the discussion. I think we may need to be specific in terms of the issues that the members have raised. And be direct to the issues that are coming and also the recommendations that the members are raising. So we'll run in that order. So that we are able to capture issues that the members have interacted and raised with them. Thanks, members, for your contributions on this matter. In that order, I see Mr. Shiburi. Unless the order I've advised is to. You may need to run it. Otherwise, the CEO, can you advise?
Chair, I defer to Chair and CEO.
Okay.
The chair will indicate how he wants us to proceed, but we stand ready to answer. Thanks, Chairperson.
But I assume that this is a collective report, so it does not need it needs the chair of the committee to request you to respond to the issues that are raised. I see you want us to start with the chairperson. Chairperson Mashinin and the commissioners and your team. Chairperson Mashinin.
Thank you, Acting Chair. With respect to the report, it straddles a number of areas. Some of them are operational. So with that in mind, we would ask the CEO and the Deputy CEO to respond to those operational questions. But also I have with me my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Miepa, who is the chair of the subcommittee on on the electoral matters would then lead the commissions, the commissioners' responses to the number of issues that are more at the strategic level that we raise, in particular, I think, by Honorable Mkeni. And Honorable Rose and Kanyile, I'll ask the CEO to deal with that, and Honorable Pile. From my side, let me hasten to thank the honorable members all for their constructive input and discussion on this particular report. But I want to lift one thing that very clearly is that as matters stand, the Commission has to be cautious as to how it responds to some of your questions, because the matters are now going to be before the courts. So you will have to bear with us on that aspect. And may I then proceed and ask the CEO and Mr. Shibori to tackle the issues, and then we will then after both of them, I'll ask Commissioner Miepa to lead the commissioners in responding to the other issues that I identified. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Hey, thank you. CEO Mamabulu.
Yes, no, thank you, Dr. Chabane, and greetings to members of the committee once again. I'll start with the questions that the Chair has referred to me from Honorable Ruiz. And I think it's important that we outline the central thesis, the core rationale that underpins the recommendations inherent in the report. And that is, February presents the safest opportunity and the earliest opportunity to have an election. That's the only reason. And that is based on epidemiological projections, as well as the endeavor, the national endeavor for population immunity. The decision on vaccination, or rather the finding on vaccination, is informed by international experience. The report looks at the UK and says that despite a more transmittable Delta virus in that country, the rate of the severity of the disease has reduced. Hospitalizations have reduced and mortality have reduced despite the high transmissibility of the Delta virus, precisely because people have vaccinated in large measure in that jurisdiction. So the thesis is that we're not saying there won't be any transmissions in February. There may well be, and we may well be in another wave. The fundamental difference, though, is we would have reached population immunity based on the submissions of the Director General of Health. The IC is not responsible for the national vaccination effort. That effort is led by health, and we are dependent on them being the experts in the area to indicate what the level of vaccination would be. They indicate that 40 million is the crucial number, and they would have reached the 40 million mark by February. That is the position, the grounds on which the inquiry recommends for the election to be deferred to February. Now, in terms of additional measures, as part of the terms of reference, we have set out that the inquiry must recommend additional measures, and there are 22 such measures recommended to the Commission, and the different themes which implicate those 22 recommendations were in the presentation. But let me outline some of the few which are key. Ensure that you have an additional day for special votes. In other words, instead of having special votes over 2 days, have special votes over 3 days. That will ensure that on the major day, on the major election day, there is no congestion at the voting station. In other words, decongest your voting station by urging a greater uptake of special votes. Now, that has a huge financial implication. We are in the process of compiling a budget proposal, which will be considered as part of the adjustment process. National Treasury has just given us the deadline for submission of requests for budget through the adjustment process. So we will be making that submission. So the position of the Commission is, if funds are availed in days, we will extend the number of days of special votes with a view to depopulating voting stations on election day. Another recommendation, additional measures, is that stagger people according to their surnames. No, the Commission looked at that recommendation, and they believe, while they accept there is inherent logic, we already have voting centers that can be used for this purpose. Instead of staggering by time, but you rather stagger by creating more voting facilities within the voting station. Instead of everybody going to one classroom, go to several classrooms and separate people in that way. And this is important because we have our own analysis tells us a majority of voters vote in the morning between 7 and 11 o'clock. An election is either, in other words, the majority of people have already voted by 11. So you can't stagger by time, rather stagger by facility. So we're working on that. We have that concept. It's already part of our legal framework. Another additional measure that is coming out of the report is the proposal to use special, have a special campaign for the online system to be given life. We accept that. We want to run a more intensive campaign to popularize the online campaign. We are working on that together with our partners, and we will be giving it a little bit of more impetus so that there is a greater uptake of the online system. Last one that I won't deal with all 22, but just the last one. There's a recommendation that we have the second registration weekend. We think it is a noble thing because we want to give people more opportunities to enlist on the roll. However, given the limited time of low in the low transmission period, we don't think it's going to be practical to have two registration weekends, even if money were to be made available. Because the low transmission period is projected to be September, October, November. And that is premised on the assumption that there won't be a new variant which can expedite the onset of the fourth wave. This is what the the health experts are advising us in terms of when the what will be the extent of the low transmission period. Now, in terms of the court application, we are in the process of finalizing that application. A team of senior counsel has been appointed. They are currently busy. They are currently busy drafting the application. And we plan to launch that application before the 6th of August, so next week, by next week Friday. It may be launched earlier. It's a very tricky application, as you can imagine. It's an extraordinary relief we seek, so it has to be considered quite carefully. But we intend to launch that application before the 6th. Of August. And Mr. Shiburu has already indicated to the committee that we will launch it out of the Constitutional Court. The election timetable, it is not an easy matter, and in the sense that we have to look at it so as to give role players certainty for purposes of their preparation. Yet at the same time, we have to be alive to the fact that we do not yet have a court order. So we can't proceed as if the order will be given. In other words, we should not create an impression of a fait accompli to the court. We will be discussing a draft with the National Party Liaison Committee as per normal in the early part of next week. And once we've resolved with political parties, we'll be able to communicate. The registration weekend. The date for the registration weekend will be determined in the context of those discussions around the election timetable. We first have got to go to political parties, present a draft, discuss the draft, and find one another. Once we do, then we'll be able to take everybody and the country into confidence. Insofar as the VMDs are concerned, we have taken delivery of 40,000 units. They are in the country, they are in our possession. We have downloaded on those units all the operating software as well as the different business applications, the registration application, staff application, and all that. Also, that equipment is in the country. Training, we have trained at the moment close to over 88% of the staff for the registration weekend. It was not an easy effort, I must tell members of the committee, because the bulk of this training happened within the context of the third wave, and there were significant disruptions because, as you can imagine, our staff were also infected. At one point, we had close to 96 staff who were either infected or who had to isolate because of exposure to a person who was infected. And we also had two staff members passing away during this time. So we have really tried to stay the course, even in the face of a very a devastating third wave, and we have done our best. Mr. Shiburu will talk more on the online registration and where we are with that, as well as the issues pertaining to the system.
Okay.
On PPE, we have secured PPE for the registration weekend. We've taken delivery of all PPE for the registration weekend. What is outstanding is PPE for the election day. And in that regard, we will be making, as I indicated, we've just received the timelines from National Treasury for the adjustment process, the adjustment appropriation process. So, and hopefully will be assisted. Should there be another postponement, will there be an inquiry? The simple answer to that is that in the current report, there's a strong impulse that let us not go into a slippery slide. Postpone the elections, defer the elections, hopefully once, and have them and get done. Constitute councils, let them appoint, let them pass budgets and so on. So one can never say there can never be another postponement, but there's a strong impulse in the report that says be careful not to have a situation where with ease you continue postponing and so on and so on. We do not know how long the virus is going to stay with us, and therefore you may just need to get through an election for as long as the promised number of people, 40 million, are vaccinated by the time you go to an election. The measures in place I've dealt with that. The issue of the constitutional amendment, we believe that we are dealing with a short-term challenge. And a short-term challenge should not really lead us to, with ease, amend the constitution. It was an option, but it appears to the commission that it is an option that at this stage is impractical given the timelines. You're going to need 75% vote in the National Assembly. You're going to need to publish for public comment. You know, it then has got to go to the NCOP. And in this case, you're going to need the support of six provinces. In the time available, it appears to the commission that it is an impractical option at this stage. I'll ask then Mr. Shiburu to deal with the question of the online registration, and then Commissioner Miepcha, as requested, can deal with the questions from Mr. Mkrin. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mamabulo. Mr. Shiburu.
Thanks, Chair. Let me, at the outset, preface the response as follows. The online registration facility is not intended to replace existing registration modalities of face-to-face or voting station-based. It is in addition to those modalities. So it should not be seen as giving more access to the vote to persons who have smartphones or who have access to data. As we speak, by yesterday, the figures indicated that we had activity of about 33,100 persons who had applied to register using the platform. The majority in Gauteng, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and Limpopo, in that order. What the honorable member terms as a glitch, I would not use that way, but it was a purposeful safeguard mechanism that was built into the system to ensure that people who register are who they claim to be. We have had a relook at those, and we have adjusted certain technical things like, for example, removing the app that we had for taking an image of a smart card, and so that the phones can default to the settings of the phone or the iPad that is used to make an application. That way, we have seen an improved success rate in the number of persons who have applied. We are in touch with all those persons whose applications were unsuccessful to help them to complete their applications for registration. We are encouraged that in the past 2 days, we have significantly increased the rate of success where persons attempt to do self-online registration, and with the additional features that we've included, including liaising with those persons who have attempted unsuccessfully to register, we think we should record some greater hits come next week. That is the extent of my response. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shiburi, for the responses you have given. Chairperson Mashinini, you have indicated that the commissioners will have to make inputs, responses to the issues raised by members.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Commissioner Miepa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the session, honorable members, honorable minister, colleagues. I think the CEO and the deputy CEO have extensively dealt with the issues raised. The one or two that I'm just going to sweep through, as it were. In respect of the issues raised by Honorable Mgcini Chwaku, the Commission is negotiating a very difficult terrain. The pandemic has created uncertainty even at a scientific level. And yet our constitutional obligations are very clear and non-negotiable. In the circumstances, we cannot not proceed with a potential election that must happen in terms of the regularity prescript of our constitution, that these elections must be held when the term expires or within 90 days thereafter. We just cannot, even in the light of the difficulty we face. In the circumstances, the Commission has decided, as we all know, to commission the Moseneke inquiry. It has looked at that report and it has adopted that report to the extent that the deputy CEO was indicating in his summary report. The point is, though we are approaching the court, we do not know what remedies we will be granted, or what remedy we will be granted. We are very clear in what we're going to request from the court. But in the meantime, the things that we ought to do, we must do. We indicated this to the party liaison committee. I think we indicated this to the committee that to the extent that there were positions that were diametrically opposed, we will commission the study, but we will proceed with the preparations, because by not proceeding, we are preempting a situation. Indeed, this is a dilemma we have, and we believe we have to proceed on that basis. We are also very clear. We have adopted or accepted the Moseneke report, and we are working at speed to deal with it. So the questions about launching the elections, these are clearly explained by the situation we face.
until there is a greater level of certainty. The CEO has demonstrated that we, even through the height of this third wave, have sought to be prepared for a registration weekend. Such is the dilemma we deal with. There was a question raised about why are we, as South Africa, or the Electoral Commission of South Africa, seemingly retreating in the face of the pandemic when other African countries have held elections. The report has traversed this issue, and from the report it will be clear that in Africa there were 28 elections there were 52 elections of 42 elections that were scheduled. 14 of those elections were postponed. 28 proceeded. The difference between those countries and our country are simply boiling down to the constitutional architecture of our constitutional framework. In South Africa, as it is clear, elections must both be regular and free and fair. That is the challenge we face. And that is why it is important for us to deal with these elections very carefully. And we submit as the Commission that the application of Section 14.4 to have a report that we published was not a simple decision. It was a matter we had to reflect on very carefully. And indeed, we believe that the recommendations bear that out. The fact that for once our political parties were diametrically opposed simply does not overstate that factor. Chair, as I close, I want to point out that the challenges we face persist in that there will not be a period in the foreseeable future where we do not have infections. I want to stress that even February, that has been mentioned as a date by which, well, we say by not later than February, the elections must be held. One must imagine that as a situation similar to that which we have seen in Europe when the Euro soccer games were held. We saw people going to stadia because vaccination levels were higher and what is notionally known as community immunity was perceived to have been reached. That's really, as we understand, the situation we face with respect to February. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Yes. Yes, Chair.
Chair.
Can I now invite the Vice Chairperson to speak? There are still a number of questions that are outstanding from that were raised by Mr. Nkem, so that we can conclude everyone.
No. Chair, she can't sweep. I don't know how you characterize that. I'm trying to demobilize you because there will be. I'm going to allow for follow-ups of members. I can see some of the issues are not captured, which I will highlight. We'll allow you and allow Deputy Chairperson Love and also the Minister, then get to members if there are follow-ups.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Thanks, Honourable Chabani. Thanks, Chairperson. The only there are a number of issues that were raised. I'm not sure that They were in the form of questions, and I took them to be from the Honourable Swaku. I took them to be mainly, perspectives that were being communicated by the Honourable Member. So I would want to just add one thing to Commissioner Moepia, which is the fact that as much as the Electoral Commission is not in a position to assume that the courts will make a decision in any particular way, our appeal to all political parties is similarly not to assume. So it's important, we think, for us all to be minded to think about new timetables and so on, should the courts be willing to entertain the application. But equally, we all have to know that we can't make those assumptions. And so we're appealing also to the political parties. Chairperson, I think then there are probably follow-ups, and that's what we can then respond to, unless there's something quite specific, Chairperson of the Commission, that you wish to pick up on yourself. Thanks. Thanks, Honourable Chabani.
Okay, thank you very much with that response. Yes. Minister, if there's any other matter that relates to the issues of the program of vaccination?
Yeah, no. Thank you, Chairperson. I just thought I need to make a few remarks, and thank you for this opportunity. The first thing I want to mention, Chair, is that I heard the word zero mortality being mentioned several times. And because these proceedings are recorded, I don't want us to record that in a parliamentary or a portfolio committee sitting, there was ever a belief that at any time, depending on the rate of vaccination, there could ever be zero mortality. Such a concept does not exist. Vaccination specifically reduces hospitalization and reduces the risk. It doesn't reduce death to zero, it reduces the risk. So I just want us to dispute ourselves of the concept of zero mortality, that it doesn't occur anywhere on earth. Because as long as people are born, they are going to pass on at some stage or the other. The second issue, which I just want to emphasize, is that as we engage with this report from the IEC and sit in our party license and compare ourselves with other countries, which is good because we need to sort of learn from each other. But let's also accept that this pandemic affected different countries differently. There's no country that has been a mirror image of the other in the way this pandemic conducted itself. For instance, there's a question about other countries, and I think Commissioner Moepia answered it very expertly. But I just want to add that when we compare us with other countries, we must be aware of the differences. For instance, the most prominent election that took place in the height of the pandemic is in the U.S., but you are aware that most of the most of the votes happen by postal votes, which we don't have. There are very few people who went for elections, if you remember, where they have to queue. There were postal votes, and that's why they were able to carry their elections, something South Africa does not have capacity or ability to do. Secondly, Commissioner Moepa mentioned about the 42 elections on the African continent. That 14 of them did not go on. But let's also remember that more than half of the deaths of COVID-19 on the African continent happened in one country, and that country is called South Africa. We were responsible for more than half of the deaths. Many of the countries had very few deaths, and for that reason, when they consider going on with the elections or not, it will also be with that background. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, thank you very much, Minister, for that responses. And I'm going to invite members if they're still having some of the issues to raise. But maybe the commission may need to I know it may be, as we've been cautioned, that you are still going to engage on the legal process, which I think I fairly agree. I think it's a fairly request that you are putting across. Just if you could come back on the, if this possibility of any pieces of legislation that you may need to consider post the Concord process. The other one that has been raised, I think has been raised by Honorable Ross and Honorable Mtwini, is that I hear the Commission is not coming clearly on its position on the issue of launching the elections, preparations for the elections, parallel to that with the process that has been engaged by the Deputy Chief Justice. And I think if we can just come comment on that. Members, can I invite, if you still have comments or unclear issues that the Commission have not responded. I'll start in that order. Start with Honorable Mtwini, Honorable Ross, Honorable Kanyile, Honorable Mulekwa, and Honorable Pile. Mr. Matonsi, I have requested you that you must alert me if the request that was rendered earlier on of another member who will be joining us if they're here. Honorable Mtwini, is there another matter that you need to follow up or contribute?
No, thank you very much. I'll be very quick. I wanted to on the IEC, I think the matter that I've asked, will they be able to review the from, you know, for different, you know, the because they can also in this pandemic of can you hear me?
Yeah, sorry. Can you recap? You've been cutting.
Oh, sorry. I think the issue of ICASA, I wanted to check the IC. Are they going to be able maybe to, you know, to review that, maybe to give other political parties enough time so that sometimes we don't they don't play our adverts, let's say, at the graveyard shifts. Will they be able to, you know, to review that so that we're able to, you know, to have our message being heard at, you know, at sort of like, you know, good times, you know. And then also it was the issue of the, I don't know, maybe the IC, you know, through the chair, commissioners, I was talking about the issue of also of the political space. As they are approaching the, you know, the courts of law, and also looking at the rates of infections and the vaccination. What is center of everything, you know, Chair, is the issue of opening up in only political space. And I tell Toledo, it's not being communicated correctly. When will the political space going to be on? Of course, we're looking at those, you know, the infections and all of that. So we should fill up as where we are right now at this point in time, just because of that, Gucci. We must have a political space open so that, sorry, Chair, there's some disturbances in my gadget. So okay. It's a political space, Chair. And then I advise also, Chair, that the IEC to say, maybe in their day-to-day meetings and offices and all of that, there must be a constant interaction with the epidemiologists, and also they must have like the modelers there, and the someone from Department of Health to ensure that you know they look at this wave, at this infection very, very close. So I don't know what is their take on that. Must there be a daily consultation, and maybe there some of the people can sometime move in there to really advise them in terms of what is actually happening. The last one, Chair, is that I would request that my colleagues also, because I sit in the NPLC, even though the, you know, the communication is good, you know, we get all the emails and all of that. Now, at this point in time, we need to be open, very, very, very open, because we don't have enough time. So the issuing of those, you know, the timetable and also decisions that have been made, we must make sure that our communication platform is very, very key. We did at some point, but there were some reservations with my colleagues in the NPLs who said, look, maybe sometime we need to come up with another, you know, have, the WhatsApp messages so that we're able, you know, to interact. But obviously there were issues of, you know, the security and all of that. Because sometimes when I check, the problem is that it's the fear of not knowing in terms of what is the plan, what is ICE going to do at this point in time, and all of that. So I think those are the main points, Chair, on my side. But all the other ones, I think I'm actually fine with them. So that, the timetable, I wish that in terms of, because we haven't got this invite for the next week's meeting. So okay. If the meeting is going to be next week to look at the draft timetable, let us have it ASAP, and they must consider, my colleagues in the MPLC, why we are here and we are in this position is the opening of political space so that we're able to prepare ourselves. So when they draft that, you need to take into account that we need to open the political space. It's not about having the elections there, but it's about preparation towards that. And look at the vaccination. If a vaccination and a check is that, they must even advise the colleagues in the Department of Health that remember the efficiency, not the efficacy. So you need to have time. I don't know, maybe we'll assume that it's actually going to work, so we will vaccinate. But at the end, they must, we must not have a situation that we've seen in India where people they were dying in numbers because probably the lack of the vaccination or the efficacy of the vaccination. Then we must even advise the colleagues in the Department of Health in terms of the efficacy of the vaccination. Is the proper one? And all of, as you can see now on the J&J, there are issues that are there already. If I'm not mistaken as well, the AstraZeneca or something, in America now they're saying that maybe people might be needing, the second, the third shots or all of those things, you know. So as they are doing this rollout, they need to look into that. Well, how is our vaccination and also compare it with the national ones. And they must also look at the ones in China, which they approved. They must bring it in. And the Sputnik as well, which has been seen to be fine. If you want to have and serious about having these elections, look at the vaccination so that at the end, when I check, you don't have a situation that here is a vaccine, people are vaccinated, but now new strains come in, and the development comes in that would in case you don't need one shot, you need a second shot and a third shot, or maybe and a fourth shot, like that. But anyway, I'm fine, get checked. So those were my inputs and my contribution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam Twilly, for your follow-up contribution. Honorable Ross?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. I think it's just the one issue I asked about the campaigning. What is the IEC considered to be a sufficient campaigning opportunities? Seems as this was raised in the report as a big concern, and there didn't seem to be an answer provided by the report. So as much as a lot of this is theoretical and based on different scenarios, I would imagine that the IEC would have already given this some thought. How do we overcome that challenge, and what are the ideas? And then I don't know if I understood Mr. Muepia 100%, but it sounded like he was saying that a condition for the elections to go ahead in February would be this herd immunity, and that would mean 40 million people being vaccinated. But we have about 25.5 million people registered to vote. And if we look at the previous election, it's under 60%, so around 57% would vote. So that means you'd have about 15.5 million people voting. So does it make sense to require 40 million persons to be vaccinated in order for 15.5 million people to vote? I just want to get some clarification on that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Ross. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I apologize for taking my video off. I'm struggling with network sites.
Okay.
I only have one follow-up question. I'm not sure if it has been covered, as I've stated that I was having network problems. I asked a question about a method that was used by the IEC to verify the voters that were registering online. We would like to know what method was used by IEC to verify those voters. I'm not sure if it was answered. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kanyile. Honorable Mulekwa. Honorable Mulekwa. Okay, she seems to have a problem with the network. Honorable Play.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is just the question that I'd asked earlier on the prescribed or timeframes in terms of the process that we are taking forward. So I think for me, it's just about what is the prescribed timeframes or timeline that we have, and particularly in the matter that we've discussed about briefing counsel or senior counsel, and where we are with that process. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, members, for your follow-up. I think that's important because issues that are not clear, noting that this is the most important matter that we as a parliament and the IEC, we need to deal with and navigate to make sure that local government elections are free and fair. Chairperson Mashinini, I'm going to request your team, and you'll be the last to round up the summary on the issues of the IEC. Then we'll try to work on the collective summary of members, and then we move towards closing the session. So, you are going to, I know that some of the issues that are referred to the political liaison committee, which are in a consultation process that are residing there, and the issues that you're going to be engaging on towards the Concord judgment, and the operational issues that are linked to the preparations of the local government elections, which maybe to be responded to. And I think members understood correctly that the space of that we are moving, which you have requested that we must allow that space of constitutional process to unfold, and we still have to interact with the IEC post that. Honorable Mashinin, can you delegate the issues that members have raised? Then you'll be the last person to deal with the summary on the issues of the IEC.
Thank you, Chair. Can we respond in the order that we followed before, starting with the CEO?
Thank you, CEO, Mr. Shiburi, and the commissioners. CEO, yes.
Thank you, the chairperson of the session. The launch of the elections, we clarified by way of an answer that the MEP have provided, and that is the institution of the Section 14.4 process of the Electoral Commission Act did not in any way grant us the power to jettison the preparations for the elections. In other words, the mere fact that there was the Musaneke process underway did not in and of itself mean that the preparations must cease. For if it meant that, it would have meant that we have decided the issue. If you stop preparation whilst you have the process underway, you are in fact saying the process can only have one outcome. And at that point, we went into the process with an open mind. But you'll also recall that in this portfolio committee, an issue was raised about why is there no public excitement about the elections? Why is it that there's a lull about the elections? And launching the campaign was to make South Africans aware that in terms of the constitution, an election must happen. And in order to get to that election, a registration weekend must be had. And at the launch, a registration weekend was announced. That is the reason. Was this wasteful? I don't believe so. And I did say so on previous occasion. I honestly do not believe it was wasteful. It's an investment in the democratic project to let South African citizens aware that in terms of the constitution, by the 1st of November, an election ought to be held. Whether it's later deferred or not, it's immaterial. They still needed to know that in terms of the constitution, an election is due. So, Chair, that's a categorical answer to the question. We are going to be writing to ICASA to bring to them formally the report and the recommendation in the report that more slots be availed to all electoral participants so that radio or even other broadcasting platforms can be used more widely to access the voters. So we will be taking that action. It is one of the measures that the Museneke inquiry has recommended. Then the issue of political space. As the Commission, we want a maximum opportunity for all political players to go sell their political program and their policy platform to the country. So that's our position. But we also accept that we are not responsible for the Disaster Management Act and the regulation issued in terms thereof. So at best, what we can lobby for the space to be created, especially during the low transmission period into which we are going. So to the extent that there are available consultation mechanisms that the Commission has, it's an issue that we will carry through. It is not in our interest for political parties not to have access to the electorate. It is in our interest that all political role players and the electoral contestants can speak to the electorate and sell their political and policy programs. The timetable, Chair, we will discuss that with the party liaison committee in the not too distant future, before the end of next week. And once that is done, we should be in a position to communicate more broadly about that. We are in consultation with the epidemiologists. We do meet them from time to time. I don't think it will be practical to have them in our office as advised. But each time we ask for data, each time we ask for meetings, they are available to us. And that's the resource that we are using and basing some of our decisions on the information they provide to us. So there is no lack of access to data. We do get the data, and they are available to us. They are at our call, so to speak. The vaccines are matters that are outside of the purview of control of the Commission. Because we are a creature of statute, we only have the powers and functions that are listed in our legislation. In other words, we must set up voting stations, we must do voter education, we must run a communication campaign, we must register parties, we must register candidates, and so on. we are not entitled to go outside of the four corners of the statute book to do things that are not inherent in the mandate. But that does not mean we may not interact with the Department of Health and relay the sentiment that arises from here. That we will do, because it is in our interest that all South Africans, a majority of them, are vaccinated and fully vaccinated at it, and that the onset of severe illness is obviated. So we will use, if you like, forums of consultation to deal with the issues that members of the portfolio committee are urging us to resolve, whilst not being within the total purview of the commission. Now, the issue of what is sufficient campaigning, what is the sufficient level? The report, and in fact the submission that I made on behalf of the commission, traverses that topic. And it traverses it by saying, what is the standard for free and fair election? Because you've got to deal with that question within the notion of what is the standard for free and fair election. And one of the issues we are elucidating in that topic is that political parties must have ability to communicate with the electorate. Because to make an informed political choice, it has to be on the basis of information coming from different political role players. So the ability of political parties to present to the electorate their policy programs, one. Two, it is about the right to stand for public office, and if elected, to hold such office. Because unless you are able to have the political space, as Mr. Swaku says, to decide who candidates are and so on, that Section 19 right to stand for public office and if elected to hold office is hollow. Is nuggetry. It only has content if the space is available, enabling you to have political discussions or whatever you need to select to select a candidate. So this thing of a political space goes to the heart of standards and also goes to the recommendation around ICASA. Because the Constitution does not define how the campaigning must be. It may well be that political parties have to adjust the manner in which they engage the electorate, move away from more physical forms of campaigning to less direct forms of campaigning. Hence, this recommendation that we engage ICASA to provide more public election broadcasts than was previously the case. So you answer that question by saying, what is the constitutional standard? And the report does traverse that topic of what is the standard for free and fair election, because you cannot deal with it outside of the parameters of what the standard is. Now, the issue of the level of participation and the vaccination to reach population immunity, the 40 million vis-a-vis the 15 million. Indeed, 15 million may be voting. But those are only the people who are casting the ballots. An election involves a bigger group of people than that. There's going to be political agents talking to people at the shopping centers, at the street corners, doing house to house, and so on and so on. So, you know, so it's the electoral process does not only involve only those that are voting. It involves a bigger number of groups and individuals broadly in society. Now, it is difficult to say Saif Mamabolo is going to be approached by a party agent who's vaccinated on this day. Hence, you've got to work on a national population immunity. Because in that case, it doesn't really, you wouldn't know who is vaccinated, who's not vaccinated, but for as long as you've reached that level guaranteeing your community immunity. And as Shivuri indicated earlier, that does not mean there can never be transmissions even during a point where we've reached population immunity. All it means is that the severity of the disease, in other words, morbidity and mortality will be reduced. And again, noting what the minister said, it doesn't mean it will ever get to zero, but mortality and morbidity will be reduced. You will still have transmission. So the magic is to, or rather the objective is to get a gross number of people in society to be vaccinated. And whether a person is vaccinated or not, they may participate in the election, and there may still be transmissions, viral transmissions, but the critical issue is the severity of those viral transmissions. The methods used to verify the voters are left to Mr. Shivuri. Now, the last one on my side is the timeframes for the Constitutional Court application. We've appointed counsel. It's a team of counsel. They are busy drafting an application. They'll be working even over the weekend to get to finalize the that application. We will have to review it in the early part of next week. And if we agree with the contents thereof, we will then give them a go-ahead to launch. We anticipate that we will launch before next week, Friday. We won't go beyond next week, Friday. It may indeed be early, but we don't want to commit to that early because we are also dependent on confirmatory affidavits of people who are outside of the Electoral Commission, people over whom, and people over whose time we don't have direct control. So the logistics of that court application are underway. The timelines have been set. The 6th of August is the outer day. The application is in the process of drafting, and all that is required, the information that we need for that application has been gathered. And political parties obviously have a main, have a substantial interest in the matter, will probably be cited. The application will be placed on our website because every voter has an interest in the matter. So the court application must be easily accessible to a cross section of South Africans. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Mamabolo. Mr. Shivuri, is there anything you would want to...
Thanks, Chair. I've been asked to address the Portfolio Committee on a narrow matter of method of verifying voters who apply online. And it's as follows. First, a person goes onto our platform, onto our website, they create a profile and they provide a contact details, be it cell phone or email address at which they wish to receive notifications or wish to be contacted. They will, after having received that, after having created a profile, they can start the process of registering themselves, and they will receive a one-time PIN that they must input within a time frame to proceed with the application. Then they will have to input their details and capture an address, because we accept that not all addresses can be found on the National Address Dictionary. There is also a facility for persons who live in more rural cities to navigate and pane through a map to identify a description of their place of ordinary residence. So if you live in a suburban area, you'll probably enter your first digit of a street name, and the net will pick up that street and your suburb and everything and auto-complete. But if you live in a more rural area, you may have to take some time to pane through maps until you find a area that best describes your place of ordinary residence. Then you scan in the reverse of your smart card, if you have a smart card, or the front page of your green barcoded ID numbers. And once you've done that, the system will auto compare those details against the details held by the Department of Home Affairs on the National Population Register to confirm your citizenship, because the constitutional standard is that only citizens can be enrolled as voters on the voters roll. In broad terms, those are the steps for the verification of a voter. And this were agreed to with the PLC. We also invited technical people from political parties to a workshop with our system developers so that they could check the security features and satisfy themselves that the systems are solid and that there is no opportunity for mischief. Before I stand down, Chair, I just wish to say something about the point that the CEO has dealt with as it relates to political space and what we consider to be adequate time period for campaigning. The Concord, in a similar judgment, has addressed that matter, and it disabused all of us of a notion that there is a golden standard for free and fair elections. Instructively, the Concord said each case must be judged on its own merit or in its own context. In other words, while there are indicators for freeness and fairness, those must not be inflexible. They must respond to the context. And we agree that COVID has intervened to create a new context, which requires level of flexibility on our preparation as an election management body, but equally requires flexibility on political parties as key contestants for an election. So the standard can be that for campaigning to be deemed to be free and fair must be as it existed in the elections that took place in the year 2011 or any other period outside of the COVID environment. COVID is a reality. It has altered the context. So the standards for free and fair election must infuse the new context that has been imposed by COVID. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shiburu. Whilst we're still there, Mr. Shiburu, Honorable, can you raise a matter that in the process of this online application, there were some glitches. Glitches, if I've captured her correctly, and what were the limitations around that, given your response around the process you have engaged on, and if it happened, what then becomes the responses on the part of the IEC to make sure that
this online voting registration stay up.
Okay, I will repeat what the response that I issued in the first round, Chair. The Honourable Member refers to as glitches are primarily two things. One, indeed, was a glitch. It related to the delay in persons receiving their OTP. So when you created a profile, there were delays in people getting their OTPs. We have since resolved those issues with our service providers. The other thing that people may perceive to be glitches are not glitches, they are deliberate safeguards in the system. For example, we want a person to scan the reverse side of their smart card because it has the barcodes that contain the National Population Register identity number. Similarly, we want a person to scan the front page of their green barcoded identity because it has their ID picture and it has the barcode for an identity number, so that on the strength of those things, we can then harvest the data and compare it against what they provided to us before. And we can then run comparisons before with the Department of Home Affairs to confirm citizenship of those persons. If you do not do that, a person can scan in a blank page, and because your system is not robust enough, it will accept that as a person having scanned something. Or they could scan in a profane image or something like that. So the robustness was intended to deal with that. We have, however, reviewed that without losing the security imperative that it serves. And as a last point, all those persons who tried to register themselves and were unsuccessful, we have their details. We have a team that is in contact with them to help them conclude their details. We have reference numbers on a daily basis. At the end of the day, we take stock, we look at the report to say of X number of attempts to register, X number did not go through, and we contact those persons to help them conclude their transaction. And as a last point, as I said, in having implemented those changes in the last 2 days at least, we have noticed that the rate of failure has substantially reduced. So those are not wasted attempts. We will get in touch with those voters to help them to conclude their registration process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Shiburi. Chairperson Mashinin?
Yes, thank you. I wanted to ask Mr. Shiburi that while you are still on the platform, if he could respond to the question that the Honourable Chair asked related to are there any legislative amendments that are envisaged or implicated by the Musineke report?
Thank you, Mr. Mashinin, for assisting us to revisit that question. Mr. Shiburi?
Thanks, Chair. The only purposeful recommendation that has implication on the legislation is not intended for this election. Even in the report, the Justice said this is for future consideration, and that is the introduction of some form of electronic voting to help us deal with difficulties that are imposed by pandemics, whether now or sometime in the future. However, Chair, let me also hasten to add that good practice from election management bodies and election scholars will tell you that you do not introduce legislative amendment too close to an election, because that may just create uncertainty and imperil the legislative process. So the Commission has resolved that all those recommendations that do not require legislative amendment will be accommodated, but those that require legislative amendment will be considered post the elections.
Thank you, Mr. Shiburi. Chairperson Mashinin, if you may round up, if you delegate commissioners, then we we'll invite the minister. If he has something, then we close. Chairperson?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think the CEO has responded to most of the questions, but let me just check with my colleagues, if all of them, Dr. Masuku and the Vice Chair and Commissioner Miepa, if there are any other comments that they may want to make before then I make my closing comments, Chairperson. Colleagues?
Okay, thank you. Dr. Masuku, is there any other matter?
I thank you very much to the chairperson of the session and the chairperson of the Electoral Commission. I am sufficiently covered by all the comments that have been made by the IEC team. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Mueta.
Thank you, chairperson of the session. I think that the questions raised have been adequately dealt with. I need to just leave this thought. It wasn't raised, it was implied. When the IEC goes to court, surely it will be seeking to act within the law, and to the extent that it is not able to, it will be asking the courts to make a facility available to it to do so. In this process, as we have evidently seen, even at this meeting, it may well be that the position the IEC articulates is one that, affects Parliament, even as Mr. Ruiz has indicated, that Parliament might want to look at this and say, what do we do of it? And approach the court, or react to the papers. And I want to say, given previous experience with this kind of things, I think it would only be fair that all of us look at those papers and help the court to make the appropriate decision. I thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Deputy Chairperson?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm covered, and thanks to you and to the colleagues, but also to members of the Portfolio Committee. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson Mashinin.
Yes, thank you. The first thing I would like to comment, Chair, is I think there was a question that Honourable Mulekwa raised about will there be any consultation envisaged in terms of our processes. And I hope I understood the question. What we can say is that the Commission is required, by its the regulations and the laws, that consultation must continue between the Commission and the political parties represented. And so that is the continuous platform for the consultation, which the Commission exercises with the political parties. So the PLCs are the platform for the continuous liaison. And we hope then that will be in a position to identify if there are any gaps or so where they might have to be supplemented in order to make sure that we have sufficiently consulted. But on the other hand, I think the mechanisms and the measures that the Commission has adopted of transparency, they actually are quite optimized, because throughout this process, there hasn't been any stage that has not been in the public domain. Documentation, presentations, as well as the subsequent steps and stages that we are involved with. So that consultation is in place, and also with the transparency. But we are also required in law in that we consult specifically now on the local government election, that we maintain optimum consultation with the Minister of COGTA. And throughout the process, the Commission has been engaged and has been consulting with the Minister in particular in making sure we fulfill our obligation, but at the same time to make sure that also, as we are dealing with something this intricate, and we have never chartered the country on these waters, that there must be optimum synchronization so that we don't send any confusion either to the public or to the country, to the stakeholders, as well as international stakeholders, that the country and the democracy are floundering or otherwise. The situation is fully under control, and it is being steered with the utmost sensitivity and ensuring that it is a structured process and that does not leave room for us to have any reckless activity or unintended consequences. So we also are in touch and we are in full liaison with our stakeholders and also with the cabinet through the interministerial committee. And meetings are continuously and scheduled and they still be scheduled to take everybody on board in as far as the layers. And so I just thought that question was important that we also put on record the position and the activities of the commission in its endeavors in making sure that the process is as transparent as possible. And then further, I think there are other questions that perhaps one does not want to give an impression that the commission is sweeping aside. And this was a question that related to the statement made by Honorable Mthweni that they were surprised by the Honorable President, His Excellency Cyril Ramaphosa, announcing on a political party platform the envisage election date. I think respectfully, we as the commission are not in a position that we can answer for the head of state. But the honorable member is in a position that he can raise that directly through the parliamentary processes. But on our side, we have been in consultation with the minister, and the minister does consult with the cabinet. So in that process and in that period, the commission has clearly indicated that it was ready to discharge its statutory obligation to make sure that it delivers the elections and it must indicate its state of readiness. Now, when and the timing and who announces under what circumstances, it's a matter of what you call the minister and the cabinet. But for us, at that point, we were very clear that we are ready to discharge our responsibility. Earlier on in my introduction, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I also indicated that paramount to the Commission, that the Commission is not and has not and will not take the law in its hands. We are actually obliged to fulfill that law, and which was we're supposed to be ready for the elections. And we stated and that clearly to the country that, yes, we are ready. But to the extent there was an issue due to the extraordinary circumstances that were posed, not just by the COVID, as we have experienced with the COVID with respect to the earlier variants. The new variant posed even further threats. For us to come to a conclusion after consulting the parties, it was very clear that we needed a structured process. And hence, we continued with those two things in parallel. We fulfill our obligation, and we still are continuing to fulfill our obligation, because even the remedy that we are seeking, we cannot be seen to have now taken the law in our hands. We are still going to the court, but as matters stand, the law is what should be prevailing in the country. So I think there is a misunderstanding of what was the intention of the commission. The commission is continuing until it has received the remedy that it has sought from the competent competent courts. So I think it's an issue that for us also deals with the misperception that may be created to the taxpayers and the people of this country, that for us to act in that way, we were acting fruitlessly and we were acting wastefully and therefore acting recklessly. I believe with all due respect that given what we did, we were doing that which we believe is lawful. We would leave the AG to make a determination later on, because we would be getting audited, and also we would leave the rest of the debate to the court, because what we have said is we are now approaching for the relief. What we are appealing for is that this challenge and the waters we're chartering, they require the utmost non-partisan approach as we are advancing to the next stages of our process. There are things that we do not have the guarantees, like anybody else, including scientists. We are working with the best information that is before us. And as Justice Mosineke pointed out, is that these are decisions based on the science of probabilities. Of course, the probability is not necessarily 100%. And we respect the divergence of the views. But it's important not to trust as a nation, as a country, in ensuring that we continue to nurture and navigate all the challenges and the landmines that are before us, as this challenge is a collective challenge between ourselves and yourselves as leaders and elected representatives. On those notes, Chairperson, I'd like to thank the Chairperson, and also to thank the honourable members and the honourable minister for all the support, encouraging and the robust engagement that we've gone through as the Electoral Commission. And thank my colleagues for all the information that they have so generously shared in this platform. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson Shinini. Minister, if comments, last comments.
Yeah, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Just two comments, Chairperson. Firstly, at the first round, I should have answered this, but it slipped my mind. There was an assertion that the president got excited to announce the election, that he should not have done so before perhaps maybe processes like Mosineke Commission are undertaken. I just want to emphasize that the president is enjoined by the Constitution, like all of us, and is enjoined by Section 1D of the Constitution about the regularity of election. In the same way, it's enjoined by Section 159(1) of the elections about the term of municipal elections. It would have been amiss for the president not to make an announcement of the date of elections based on a feeling that perhaps there's a possibility that the elections might not take place. He was doing his job constitutionally, and it was correct. And if he did not do so, I think he would have run foul of the constitution of the country. The second thing I want to answer is the question from Honorable Ruas, which he brought twice because he felt that it was not being answered. Honorable Ruas is trying to find a mathematical link between the number of people needed to achieve herd immunity and the number of people who may end up casting their votes. He's asking a question that the likelihood is that only 15 million people will cast their votes. Why then do we need to vaccinate 40 million? Now, that is the mathematical link he's trying to look for. And it does not exist, unfortunately, at all. Maybe to simplify it for you, in Europe, sport was banned, soccer especially, which is very popular there. Soccer is played by only 22 people at any one time. And they have to immunize millions, literally millions, just to allow 22 people on the soccer pitch. Then spectators, even after allowing the 22 people, they did not allow spectators, but if you check spectators in a stadium, it can be anything between 60,000, or perhaps you can stretch it to 120,000 for the biggest stadiums in the world, but millions literally have to be vaccinated in Europe in order to allow those number of people in the stadium. So the fact that we need 40 million for herd immunity is unrelated to the activities that might take place thereafter, because it will be activities such as elections, such as going to church, such as soccer and art and culture activities, etc. But herd immunity simply means what number of people do you need in a particular population in order to stop the advance of a particular disease. And in our case, it happens to be this 40 million. And by the way, Chairperson, it's not for the first time. In measles, we know if you don't vaccinate 85% of the children, there will be a measles breakdown, a breakout. The fact that there's no measles breakout in the country is because we do immunize 85%. Lastly, Chairperson, you may remember that in 2014, during the International AIDS Society Conference, which took place in Melbourne in Australia, scientists came with the concept of 90-90-90, meaning if in any particular population or setting, 90% of the people are tested, 90% of those who are tested is put on treatment, and 90% of those who are on treatment acquire viral suppression, then we reach some form of herd immunity in HIV because it will no longer be transmitted. So let's not confuse herd immunity with the number of people who get involved in any one activity, be it elections, sports, arts and culture, church, political meetings, or any other. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members, for interacting with the of the IEC. The IEC is disrupting our meeting. Chairperson Mashine. Thank you. We want to thank members, honorable members, for interacting with the report that has been presented by the collective IEC leadership, the chair and the IEC commissioners, Mr. Mamabolo and the executive team, and the minister, Mtswaledi. We must also appreciate the process we have taken to initiate the parallel process for former Deputy Chief Justice inquiry, and also thank structures, political parties, civil society, and all stakeholders involved in the process that has generated this report. And I think in our collective resolve, we have to navigate this pandemic, at the same time balance with the process to have fair, free and fair election. And I think that stands within our resolve. So I want to thank members for this contribution. The committee notes this report and will monitor the process that the IEC is going to take in terms, as you have outlined, to approach the Constitutional Court on this matter. And post that, we'll have to invite the IEC to interact with the process forward, including the plans that are going to be amended moving forward, the voter registration, and other processes that will, at the end, give a free and fair elections. We think that we have noted the matter that we're also going to seek a legal interaction with Parliament in terms of this process that you're going to engage at the level of the portfolio committee and see how we're going to interface with it. I want to thank members of the media and the community. This was an empowering session so that there's clarity in terms of the issues that members have, and also members of the public, the community, South Africans, must benefit from this process that are going to engage on. We have to, all of us as the public representative, you, the IEC, to mobilize our people to voluntarily
participate in this vaccination program. With those words, I want to thank members of the IEC. You have joined us in this meeting, the media community, and your staff for interfacing with this process. We'll take a close monitoring on the process post the your approach to the constitutional court. I'll now invite and I will release if members, the commissioners will want to be released to leave the meeting, they are allowed. Thank you very much. Mr. Matonsi, I'm going to invite you to run announcements, then we're going to close the meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matonsi.
Hi, Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, proceed, Mr. Matonsi.
Okay, it's fine. What I want to do is just to show the program, the draft program, and then speak to it as well. The committee has been approved to conduct an oversight to KZN and Gauteng following the unrest that took place the last week. And then we are approved to go from the 1st of August until the 6th of August in the two provinces. And then we will be starting with KZN. In KZN, we'll be sleeping. I'm sorry to try to move the... Yeah, in KZN, we'll be sleeping at Protea Hotel, Fire and Ice. And then in the morning on Monday, then we'll be receiving a briefing on the offices that were damaged in and looted in KZN by the provincial manager. This will take place at Umgeni office, which is the regional office in Durban. Then from there, we'll all drive to Ishowe office just to do a walkabout and the inspection on the damages. And then we'll have a lunch there, and then we'll drive back to the hotel. Then the following day, which is on a Tuesday, there will be two offices that will be visited. That will be the IMPE and the office. I understand it's outside of Pietermaritzburg. And then there is an office at Vulameto, which is at the Igbo district in the South Coast. So those are the three offices that were vandalized and looted in KZN, according to the report I received. And then after those two offices, on the second day, which is Tuesday, I'm sure there will be a lot of driving from Mpe and Let as well to Ugu district. And then we'll be done with the oversight in KZN in terms of the program. And then on the 4th, which is a Wednesday, the committee will travel to Gauteng, and then we'll be staying at the Premier Hotel next to OR Tambo International Airport. Then on the 5th, the oversight will be done by the committee at the... We'll have to receive a briefing by the provincial manager on the extent of the damages and looting at the Home Affairs offices. The report that I got was that the looting happened at the Barra office, which is in Soweto. And then there was another one in Mamelodi, in Pretoria, in Tshwane. So those are the two offices in Gauteng. Then we'll be done on the 5th, and then we'll go back to the hotel for those who are traveling outside of Gauteng. And then on the 6th, and then we all travel back to our constituencies. And also, Chairperson, the members that are not participating on the Truth Mesel quarter. And then Mr. Pillay and Ms. van der Merwe will only participate in the KZN leg of the trip. They won't be going over to Gauteng. And then also as a staff, we're requesting that because of the limited number of flights, members should not change their flight details, because once you change, we are not going to be able to get another flight very soon. Yeah, I think that's all, Chairperson, that we, I have. And then I'm sure also members who might have received SMSs regarding their flights. If members have not received the SMSs, please contact either me or Nandipa so that no, we'll ensure that no members are able to receive their flights, and then they are not going to be missing their flight on Sunday. Thanks, Chairperson. That's all.
Thank you very much, Mr. Matunzi. I'm not sure. I don't think there are comments on this announcement, unless there's something members you want to get clarity on this announcement. Yeah, I think you are clear, Mr. Matunzi. Thanks very much for the preparation for the oversight. Thanks very much, Minister, with your team. Honourable members, thanks very much for this attending this portfolio committee meeting to deal with the IEC. We'll monitor the process as the brief as been briefed. The meeting is there's no any other item, Mr. Matunzi.
No, Chair. No, there's no other any item.
Yes. No, thanks. Thanks, members. The meeting stand adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.